Episode 17 of Security Nation. This is Kyle Flaherty. Today, got to talk with Ashley Siemens. Ashley has headed up kind of global strategy for our partners here at Rapid7, and she's coming off of her time over at the Intel Security, Intel McAfee Focus event. This is their big user conference. As you'll hear, it's quite a conference, and I'm sure there's a lot of people actually out there listening who probably attended and maybe saw a lot of this stuff. But, you know, we talk about partnerships, partner integrations, what that means overall for security folks, because I think it can get confusing. What's a marketing partnership versus a true integration? What's going to help you? What to look for? All of those things. But then kind of the conversation quickly went to just in general what's going on out there in the marketplace, and especially around two of the keynotes that were happening at the Focus event. One was Ashton Kutcher. I think it's Kutcher. Let's go with that. And then Ted Koppel. And the kind of commonalities, but also differences between the two of them and what that spurred in terms of thinking around the marketplace, around kind of security in general, what it means for us. Actually, super fascinating. Loved this conversation. One of my favorite podcasts that we've recorded so far. So enjoy episode 17 with Ashley Siemens, and we'll see you on the other side.
You're listening to Security Nation with host Kyle Flaherty.
And the nice thing is, too, I just start recording. People love that. That's what I've already started doing.
We're live.
They do. Live. I wish it was live, actually. I think that would be a lot of fun to do. I wanted to do one at United. And speaking of United, see that? Boom. Transition. User conferences. You just came back from Intel McAfee's Focus event, I guess. Mm-hmm. I should say it properly. And we can talk about the branding and all that stuff, too, as a marketing nerd. What was that like? Is that your first time at that event? I've never been.
Yeah, it's my second time.
Okay.
We attended, Rapid7 attended last year when we announced the partnership around the vulnerability management business.
Okay.
And that relationship. But last year, it was very last minute for us. We signed our agreement with them the week before Focus, maybe, threw together a crew to go out in a booth, and we didn't really know what to expect.
Yeah.
It was a great show for us. A lot of current customers, a lot of prospects, a lot of partners. There's an international presence, so we really enjoy the Focus events both years.
Yeah. So part of this is, and certainly part of your role, is building these kind of relationships with these companies. And you and I talk about this a lot as someone who's been in this market for a long time, like I have. Partnerships can run the gamut from, yeah, let's sign a partnership and we'll hold hands and we'll do this, to we want to get better around our technology. We want to do something for your customers. We want to do that. Obviously, at the Focus event, and people can go and look at the news that we announced around EPO, DXL integration, all that stuff. But like, what's the difference between like creating a partnership that has more to do with the product and the customer than just like going and showing up at a booth?
Yeah. So the great thing about the SIA program is that there is a lot of rigor around it.
Mm-hmm.
So as a security professional, when you see that an integration or a partnership is sort of certified or complies to some sort of standard versus just, hey, there was a customer somewhere that asked for some interoperability to be built, and so they built it as a one-off, and you never know if they've ever looked at it again or it might not work. This is very different from that. This is an ongoing relationship, and the two companies working together to find ways to solve some of the customer problems that just one of the solutions can't solve by itself.
Yeah.
So that's really, I think, the most interesting part when you look at the SIA program, is there's a lot of conversation amongst the SIA partners in an advisory sense to come up with use cases that we can solve together and go build that and follow some sort of standards to keep that maintained and ongoing.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that if they've never been through the SIA program, it's, and there's others like this, right? I mean, it's not just McAfee's I mean, there's others like that. I know Palo Alto has a similar program. Checkpoint has similar programs. And in fact, we have similar programs.
Mm-hmm.
But it takes product engineering time. And like, to me, that like, you have to devote, I mean, we know the product guys who were working on this integration. This takes time for them to do it. They got to put it a part of their roadmaps, all that. And then the integration takes time. I mean, for the EPO DXL thing, how long have we been? Months.
Yeah, we started thinking about it when we first became partners.
Yep.
It took a long time to figure, well, it took a relatively long time to figure out what the best first integration would be.
And that goes
we'll continue
back
to
what
do
you
more.
Said, though, around the customers.
Right.
And like figuring out, all right, what's the best way? Like, what's the best thing for them?
Right.
Ultimately.
And we wanted to, first step for us was at least provide the same level of interoperability that they had with MVM to the rest of the McAfee product lines. And also put our Rapid7 swagger on it, right?
Sure.
Like do something better, make it better, but not go so far that it would take so long.
We really
wanted to make sure that they had something,
some
way to bring the VM data together.
And make it iterative, and then we can keep going on that. So at the show itself, we were talking a little bit, I'll put a little bit of the marketing nerd hat on from my perspective, but I've been to a million user conferences. You've been to a ton of them. In fact, while you were at Focus, I was at United, Rapid7's, and we're going to have a podcast later this week about that. That's called Teasing in the Business. See how I just throw that down like
that's
that?
Good. You're good.
With friend of the pod, Matt Hathaway. He'll be joining us. So get used to that. But this one sounded like it was all out. Like, and so this is 2 years. Has it been basically the same each year, or do they step it up this year, like, and just go nuts?
Yeah, I was really impressed last year. And this year, I think the extra layer that they put on it was they're coming out as McAfee once again. They announced their rebrand. They showed all of the pomp and circumstance around the new logo, what you will expect to see when they spin off, which is going to be April. So I think like the biggest, most impressive piece of this is for 2 days, both mornings are 3 hours, everybody, 3,500-ish people in one room. The audio visual production in this place is insane. And everything from just, you know, the music to, we went into the keynote on Tuesday morning or Wednesday morning as everything blue, Intel security, even from the casino floor. This is an Aria in Vegas. All the signage was Intel security. Went into the keynote, Chris Young announced the rebrand of McAfee. You walked out, everything was red. The entire casino, they have flipped it over in that 2 hour span. I mean, it was like, it was legit.
Yeah, I can't imagine the I mean, just watching our team here, Sue and the team, like, do United for our customers. It's just, it's staggering amount of work. Then to do something like that just blows my mind. Back to the, it was something that just popped in my head. Back to the integration and the partnership and all that stuff. You know, and we're talking about people and obviously these types of partnerships. And for the audience, it's like, when you get marketed to, and I can say this, when you get marketed to around partnerships, integration, stuff like that, it can be highly confusing. It's hard enough in security. We talk about this endlessly on this podcast of just how do you siphon through all of the stuff that's out there. But then that other layer of like, oh, yes, seamless integrations, like all that. And I probably use that term myself. And we'll have to go back to the solutions brief and see if it's in that way. But it's like, how do I sit there and say, all right, how can I dig a little bit deeper and say, oh, no, this is legit? Like, what if you were putting on your prospect's hat? How do they do that?
So I think that, first of all, the process around the SIA program and the rigor that they, you know, Intel security enforces on the partners, that's pretty public.
Mm-hmm.
You can kind of dig into, you can dig into what they actually require of us to get that stamp of approval. And then separately, I think that there's a lot that can be said for like asking a Rapid7 SE or a salesperson to kind of take you through like, okay, what does this look like in reality? because anybody can pitch you, it does this and it does that. Yeah. And sometimes then when you see it, you're like, okay, sure, that's what Kyle wanted you to say that it did. But like, is that really how I would use it?
Yeah.
And then it's really like, I think when you start talking about, okay, how am I actually going to use this in my day to day is when you can put that extra layer of like, how relevant is this?
And you said that they actually did that during the keynote on those big screens that you're talking about.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
It was pretty cool. Intel Security announced that they're opening up DXL. They're moving to an open source. They did that first for their customers. So during the keynote in the second day of Focus, they actually hit publish and opened up the source code for their customer base so that customers can write their own. It's super easy. I mean, I'm not technical, but it looked like minimal amounts of, you know, like I thought maybe I could do it. So
after this podcast, you and I are going to start.
Right. We're going to try.
Yeah. It's going to be awesome.
So they are allowing their customers to basically bust their own data within the McAfee solutions or with other solutions that are on EPO or sorry, DXL.
Yeah.
And then in April, they're going to open it up to the community. So literally non-SIA partners, any vendor who wants to consume data or publish or drive use cases with other vendors, like it's open.
Yeah.
And so that is a really interesting part of the whole thing as well.
Yeah. And you said that visually too, they showed from Checkpoint to like, they just showed how it would work. And it goes back to your like, prove it to me. Like,
right.
Cause everyone talks about integrations. It's like, show me how it would actually work.
Yeah. So they were leading up to this big announcement around the open source and they wanted to show both how the McAfee solutions worked on DXL, but also how other vendors could take advantage of it. So Checkpoint, and Rapid7 are both SIA partners who have been sort of the first movers on the DXL platform, building more robust integrations than just, hey, we're putting our data out there. Yeah, so if you want to consume it, you can.
Yeah.
And so Checkpoint, they showed it on the big screen in this whole production in front of the whole crowd. It was pretty impressive. The Checkpoint firewall found something that it wanted to alert the rest of the systems to. It published it on DXL seamlessly, went into the other McAfee products and also kicked off a scan in Nexpose and, you know, in front of the crowd hit start, it all ran. It was pretty cool.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And you were named an MVP. Not you.
Me personally.
You personally.
Yeah.
Is it most valuable partner? Is that the...
Yes. So the SIA program each year, I don't know how many years running this is. It's not like the Oscars.
Let's say this is the 50th anniversary.
Yeah. We're the 50th winner.
No, it was not the 50th anniversary.
Right.
It's probably 5-7 years, something like that.
Yeah. They have three categories.
Okay.
Rookie of the year.
All right.
Most innovative SIA partner and most valuable partner.
All right.
So we were a finalist for most innovative. So they still gave us a glass, piece of glass for that, which is cool.
Where is this?
It's in the mail, hopefully, from Vegas to here.
We need this.
I'm hoping UPS didn't lose it somewhere. We haven't seen it yet. So I don't know. So we got a finalist trophy for most innovative and we won most valuable partner of the year.
So do you go up and give an acceptance speech?
I wish.
No?
I went up, took a picture, shook some hands, got our piece of glass.
You should have grabbed the microphone and be like, oh, I didn't prepare anything, but and then bring a piece of paper out.
Yeah, right.
I'd like to thank my agent, Shimmy.
Kyle.
Nate. No, not Nate. We'll just see if Nate's listening. And then Ashton Kutcher. I mean, come on.
Is it crazy? Ashton Kutcher and Ted Koppel.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was really cool.
But not together.
Not together, no.
That'd be
2 days.
A good panel.
And Reeves. Mm-hmm. Do you know Reeves? He did, so the whole, like...
I didn't until you had mentioned it, or I saw it on the, I think their agenda or something like that.
Yeah. It all kind of goes into the production quality of this event. I mean, the content and the quality of the speakers and the way that they were able to connect it back to topics that were relevant to the security, you know, person or ecosystem was crazy, because you don't expect that from Ashton Kutcher.
Right.
And I say that he was there and people kind of laugh, and he was so impressive.
Yeah.
But I think like the interesting thing about him is he was saying that he had his social security number stolen, published online.
Oh.
He had to go through the process process of having it change, like most people are never going to experience.
Let's hope not.
He has his own personal security team, cyber and like physical. He was talking about how he feels as though he's ahead of the curve in terms of the general public thinking about their lives being public and how you have to protect yourself. He has to think about that way more detail than any of us do now, but maybe not ever. And so he also has started to make some investments in security startups, and he's very interested in sort of like the personalization of security and how like the average person would be interested.
Like consumer, like just getting it to the level of like Joe Schmo can understand.
Like he actually cannot remember the name of the company that he was talking about. I'm sure folks can Google it and figure it out. But he was talking about like basically creating and verifying someone's digital presence. Like, I'll admit it, I've watched the show Catfish a couple times. Super easy to just, you know, make up, steal people's pictures, create a digital identity that is very difficult to verify. So he's, one of his areas of interest is, how do you know that someone that you are interacting with in a digital sense is who they say they are? And just in general, how you think about, you know, your passwords and like, how do you talk to your mom? How do you talk to even my friends? You know, we're millennials, but they don't get it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, one of the things, I mean, I've always been B2B security throughout my whole career, and obviously we deal with big honking vulnerability management and detection and response and all this kind of stuff for big companies and things like that. It's like, the biggest threat, quite frankly, is my mom. And my grand, like, I was with my 90-year-old grandmother this weekend. She's online. She's emailing. She's, like, doing all this stuff. She's banking. She's blah, 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 blah. It's like, it would be so easy to send her an email from me, quote unquote, and she would give everything, like Social Security, the whole like kit and caboodle. She would just wire that Nigerian prince $20,000, just like that.
And it was, it's interesting too, the one of the product demonstrations that Intel Security, I still have to call them that.
Until
April, hopefully, maybe sooner.
We'll come back and you and I will do voiceovers to correct this podcast.
Change it to McAfee. So, they are making a ton of product changes. They've announced that they're getting a lot more specific in terms of the buckets their products fit into and how they all work together and whatnot, which I can't do justice to. But one of the, they do, another thing they do pretty well with these shows is they do live walkthroughs of scenarios. So it's not just, hey, look at these cool new screenshots or whatever. They're saying, hey, imagine this scenario in your day-to-day. This is happening. You see this thing pop up, or you know, Karen takes home a USB drive, and then this starts happening. So one of the scenarios that tied really well into the Ashton Kutcher theme was, you have employees that think that they're doing a good thing. You have someone, Amy, I think it was, who needs to work on a file at home at night, but doesn't want to carry her laptop home. It's super heavy. She's got a cute bag, whatever it is. She uploads it to Box. Box isn't supported. She doesn't really know better. It's a great tool for her. She goes to her boyfriend's house, downloads her file onto her boyfriend's computer, works for a couple hours, uploads it, comes in the office in the morning, downloads it. Amy thinks she's being a great employee because she's working at home at night.
More productive.
The security people freak out when they hear that, but like, be honest with you, I think if I were to poll my friends that are not in security, nearly 100% of them would not see an issue with that.
I would dare to say, poll some people in security. I won't name any names. But yeah, no, I think people do that.
And that's, and that's something I think, like, when, regardless of you're talking about their products or our products or anybody's products, that is something that's very difficult to solve, is the knowledge gap in the general public and the general workforce that's interacting with your environment.
Yeah, it was funny. So I was chairing the threat exposure management track at United, and I had three of my six presentations were customers, and they were all Nexpos / Metasploit / some inside IDR. And each one of their presentations were, you know, was focused on some employee in the company who did something they thought was the right thing to do, and ultimately something bad happened. And all of them talked amongst, you know, of course, like, the stuff we all want to hear around vulnerability management program evolution and next post this, next post blah, 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 blah. But quite frankly, the meat of the topics were more about how do you create a better educational system within your company so that you move from being the department of no to the department of let me figure that out with you. How do you, like, one of our most popular panels was the IT and security panel, and then I moderated a CISO panel at the end. The amount of questions that these people have about, you know, how do you go, this one guy came up and was asking David Barker, the CISO of Okta, how do you go out and meet with all of your regional offices and train them? This wasn't like, how do you turn on the top 25 remediation report in Expo or whatever it was? Like, they can go get that. They'll talk to our support people, whatever product is, you can go and get that stuff. It's like, how do I go and talk to people?
Yeah.
And that's huge. And so if, back to, you know, Ashton, because I can call him that.
Yeah.
If they can start figuring out that level of stuff at the same time that we're figuring out the enterprise level stuff, that could be really important.
I mean, I think this isn't, that's not just a security problem.
Well,
I think,
okay,
fair enough. When you look at, I mean, in my role working with our partners, right?
Yep.
I wish I had more time in the day to just go walk around and chat with people about, hey, what problems are you facing? Or, hey, how often have you done this? Like, let's chat about, like, how that created risk for the company. Like, you know, and so, you know, selfishly, when we talk about, like, products and bring it back to what we do is, you know what, people, our customers and security professionals spend a lot more time trying to figure out product challenges or how to put their products together or have data flow easier, automate more, have fewer of those tasks where they are just like, this is sucking my time away from spending places. We talk a lot about, like, you know, giving you more time to do the higher value things. Like, I think those are higher value things.
Right.
And so like back to the product piece, like it's not necessarily solving the problem of better training people,
right,
but it is giving you more opportunity to do that and know what are the things that you need more training on.
Yeah. And that, like, that whole idea of just pausing and kind of collecting that amount of data and talking with people, it was, I'll go back to United just because it's fresh in my mind, but and I'm sure there were stories like this at Focus of one of our customers, Fred Leeser at Cardinal Health, who he would not mind me saying this because he just had this great presentation. He was bombarded afterwards. But the main central theme of his entire thing was it was only like 1 week into his like tenure there, they shut down the vulnerability management program because they just didn't have it set the right way. And so they decided, listen, we're not going to do any more scanning. We're not going to do anything until you guys figure it out. And then he went on this worldwide tour of like all the offices, like to your, like he walked around and like figured out what were people doing? Where was this? What is this the asset that you actually need? We're going to scan it on Tuesdays. Is that okay? Like all of that kind of stuff. And then they were able to actually create a program that made it. And he admitted, he's like, not every company has the guts to do that.
Yeah.
And we're not talking about a small company here. We're talking about a fairly, I don't know if they're Fortune 100, but it's definitely Fortune 1000.
Yeah.
And so that's an enormous type of thing. And I think all too often we all run really, really fast and we don't kind of take the time to just kind of stop and be like, all right, let's just stop doing what we're doing, because if we do that, we'll probably be in a better place later.
Yeah.
And security, I think we're super guilty of that because we're frantic. It's the, you know, the breach of the day.
Right.
I'm sure there'll be some, you know, this week that we're all going to be talking about at some point.
I would like to say I hope not, I think
we are recording this. We are recording this on Election Day. I don't know when it will go live, but
the world might just act.
I hope it does. We'll see. If there's an internet tomorrow, we will put this up on said internet. What did Ted Koppel talk about?
Ted Koppel wrote a book that he published about a year ago. I have not read it. Yeah. I'm going to read it now. It's called Lights Out, and it is about the electric grid and the risk that the interconnected SCADA systems present to our future, you know, and I could go on about this for an hour about his talk. It was fantastic.
Okay.
And he kind of brought it back to like, sorry, this is going to probably be the most depressing scary thing you think about this week. But I mean, I think his whole message is, you know, we all have heard it and said it, like, it's not if, it's when. Right. And his point is, you know, political, international relations, yeah, et cetera, escalate to a certain point, and the risk already is there, yep, in terms of literally taking the United States back to the 1840s, yep, and keeping us there for days, months, years. Mm-hmm. And the biggest problem that he touches on is not necessarily preventing that from happening. Yep. It's, okay, if and when it happens, we can't survive.
Yeah.
Like, America is not set up to, you know, we couldn't live today in the conditions of the 1840s. Right. We can't grow our own food. We can't. No, yeah, it would
my
be
children,
days.
Like, it can't do anything by themselves at this point.
No, I mean, I live on the third floor of a row house in South Boston that, you know, is 50 feet from the water.
Yeah.
Beautiful,
right?
But sure, I'd be packing up and headed for the hills, right? Yeah. And there's a lot. You know, he even shared anecdotes that, of course, Ted Koppel gets access to people of that course, the rest right, of us right, never will. But he said, you know, there are head officials of states, rural states, that he has spoken to that are not putting in place plans to support their people if something like this were to happen, but to keep people out.
Wow.
Because of their proximity to major metropolitan areas, that it, like, he talked a little bit about how devastating domestic refugees would be to other parts of the country. And it's just crazy to think about, you know, the amount of time and energy it would take to prepare us for a situation like that. He said that he did a lot of work interviewing folks that manufacture freeze-dried food.
Oh, okay.
And he said, all right, if I told you today that you needed to supply 10, 20 million people with a six-month food supply, you start now.
Right.
How long would it take you to build that inventory? And they said 2 to 3 years. Oh. You've got to grow the food. You've got to, you know, so like, this is kind of, it was so interesting because like his entire talk just came back to SCADA systems.
Right.
Security and the entry points into those systems, and cyber wars being so difficult to attribute to who the actors are. You don't want to be a mistake. You don't want to mistake.
The attribution part is fascinating because so General McChrystal was speaking at United, and I actually couldn't attend because I was helping some of our speakers get prepared. But I've read his book, and he talks about that kind of shift in mentality that we have to have around that. And actually, Toss, one of our founders, is speaking at an oil and gas session this week, and I was previewing his slides just the other day. By the time this publishes, he'll probably have already done the keynote, but it was all about this fact of, like, stop worrying necessarily about the attribution, because attribution is so hard to do. Was it Russia? Was it China? Was it just some kid in Poughkeepsie? Don't worry about it. I mean, you got to do the forensics, you got to do all that, blah, 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 but put that to the side. Like, focus more of your time on what the research is saying. Focus more of your time on, like, where are the threats? Where are the landscape? Like, all of that stuff, and worry less about where it's going to come from.
Yeah.
But we have this mentality. I think it's built in from just classic kind of battles of, it's the Chinese versus the U.S. You always have to have that kind of enemy overall, and we just don't know who that is. And so don't worry about it. But it's so hard to not worry about it.
Yeah. And I think the most impactful thing that he said was his closing was like, look, you know, there's incentive for the electric and the utility companies to keep the government out. Mm-hmm. But those that are best equipped to help them prepare us in these situations is the NSA, et cetera.
Oh, yeah.
And they can't get in. Yeah. And so it's this classic, like, private, public, you know, and it all comes back to the election.
Right.
But like, that is such an interesting element to add into it, when you're talking about modern warfare where the government's not involved.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. And it's just a bunch of people.
Yeah.
And maybe business people overall. And in the meantime, the irony of that entire thing is you're sitting in one of the largest casinos in Las Vegas.
I know.
And just like that casino in particular, like that hotel in particular, is maybe one of my favorite places in the world to stay. The rooms are just so amazing.
Yeah.
But then you're like, wow, what would happen to like Vegas if that got hit by any sort
just
of
just don't let
electric
me get stuck there. That's
right, exactly. Like, where are you going?
Yeah.
Like, there's no easy way out of Las Vegas.
I mean, the water in my hotel room was $16.
Right.
So.
Exactly. Right. And it's probably connected to the internet. So you're part of the IoT. Awesome. See? Boom. 2/3, just like that. See what happens on Security Nation? It's just such a
wild
joy.
Place.
I know, people love it. Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us and sharing that information. It was great.
Thank you for having me.
You bet.